Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
That's right, your outpost for the week is freshly delivered, and I am just one of the hosts here, Matthew Rushing. And with me, as she is every single week, the woman who just makes this show work, like the Hermione of Outpost, Drea Kaufman.
Aw, hello!
Well, hello!
I like to think of myself as the Amy Santiago of Outpost.
Oh, I see.
For those of you who get the reference.
I don't. I'm one of those that does not. Who is
we'll
Amy
catch you
Santiago?
Up on your Michael, we'll catch you up on your Michael Schur shows eventually.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, we'll get there. One day I'll get there. One day I will
one
be
day
cool
you'll,
enough.
One day you'll look back on this episode and you'll totally get it.
But as per now, I don't. But one way that you can, well, many ways you can get us is wherever you get your podcasts. Outpost is everywhere you get your podcasts. Make sure, though, if you're using iTunes or Apple Podcasts, hit us up with a star rating and review. Help people find the show that way. And we really want to say thank you to everybody who has been giving us star ratings and reviews recently. It's really helping the show grow. You can also find us on Twitter at @JoinNerdParty. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/TheNerdParty. And we're online at thenerdparty.com, which is also a great place to check out all the other shows that are happening here on The Nerd Party, as well as to be able to send Drea and I an email. If you would like to do that, you can go to thenerdparty.com/contact, choose a show, and choose Outpost, and that email will come to Drea and I. We'll be able to talk to you that way. Unfortunately, though, this week we are at chapter 15, and not so unfortunate that we're reading the book, but we're at a chapter called The Hogwarts High Inquisitor. Yeah. That's pretty much all my thoughts on this chapter. And we'll see you next week.
Episode over, y'all. Just kidding.
But it is interesting that, you know, the kids do not have to wait very long, and they don't have to really search through the Daily Prophet to see what's going on, what Percy had mentioned, because it's right there on the front page with Dolores Umbridge being named the High Inquisitor for Hogwarts as the ministry seeks educational reform through one Dolores Umbridge.
I just hate her.
Yeah.
I just really, really hate her.
It's hard to not hate her. Like, I think it might be impossible to not, unless you are Dolores Umbridge, and then you really love Dolores Umbridge.
I just find it interesting that we kick off. I just love that she starts with a comment about them feeling like they're going to have to search for Percy's reference. And then it's right there in his, in your face, right off the bat. And on top of that, Percy's actually quoted in said news article.
Little turd.
Yeah, he's a turd. I hate that guy.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, I think one of the things that she does very well in this book is the way that she reminds us of our history if we know it. And, you know, here we see that one of the true hallmarks of free society is having an educational system that is not under the sway of the government, that has the freedom to be able to teach, you know, what it believes should be taught. And here we see the very thing that happens in every single society, totalitarian society, which is the moment that you want to try and start to control society, you take control of education. Because what you educate kids in, how you teach, you raise your kids, is what they will be when they grow up. So if you want a bunch of kids who can't really defend themselves and don't have the ability to have any idea what true right or wrong is other than what you tell them it is, you get this, which is a way to control the educational system and a way of taking care of anybody that would stand in your way, which is exactly what the ministry is doing with putting Dolores Umbridge in this place, which is to begin to slowly and methodically take over Hogwarts. And it is absolutely terrifying what's happening here in the book at this point.
It is. It's so... It's that... We're at that precipice where evil starts to win. And it's hard to watch. It's hard to put yourself through. But yeah, that's where we're at and that's what we're doing. And you just so hard want to shake somebody and tell them that they're just an idiot. But you know, just isn't going to do any good.
Well, and one of the things that we see here most clearly is the way in which the ministry is using the media to craft the narrative, you know, to their liking. They're using everything here to make themselves out to be, oh, we're doing this to keep you safe. We're doing this for your best interest. We're doing this for your children's best interest, you know. And of course, you know, you've even got people in there being quoted, like you said, like Percy, and then you've got Lucius Malfoy being also quoted, which, you know, the moment that that's happening, that should trigger a lot of alarm bells for anybody that has any sense. And yet, I think what we've seen throughout this book here is that the Daily Prophet has done such a good job of kind of putting people in a mindset where they're not willing to question anymore what it's putting out, because they've kind of brainwashed them now throughout the entire summer with their constant drumbeat of Dumbledore is kind of whack now and Harry Potter is a nutter and we can't really believe them and everything's fine. We're going to be fine. You're fine. You know, and that constant drumbeat has gotten people to believe that that's the truth. And it's just, it's such a potent example of the problem of propaganda.
There was such an interesting one. I mean, all of those we know because we're sort of intimately involved with those characters, but there's even a stab at someone who we've really never seen before, who was sort of standing up, taking logic and standing up for Dumbledore and the fact that this is just not... he wasn't even defending Dumbledore. It was just defending the fact that the government should stay out of education. And they basically, in the middle of this article, linked to something that is slander about her. Oh, read about this, her, you know... plot with the goblins or something, and you're like, that's not relevant nor necessary. It was a very clear, like, in like, this is no longer a unbiased government and an unbiased publication. Like, it was right there.
Well, what I really like about this is that she's helping introduce kids to exactly what happens in the media, which is you see straw men arguments and red herrings. And this is exactly what this whole article is both of those things, to throw you off what is truly important. And I just, it's so funny to be able to then watch the kids, you know, Hermione, Ron, and Harry reading this, and they're just like outraged because they get what's going on. And they get it. And my favorite thing is Ron, like, oh man, I can't wait to see McGonagall inspected. Umbridge won't know what hit her.
I do. I love it. And I love that he's so over the moon and no one else seems to be that happy, but
well,
it's still funny.
Yeah, it is very funny. And I think this chapter is really interesting too, because there's a few little things we learn. We learn about more about the owls and the grades needed to pass them. And Harry's kind of like really nervous about the fact that he got a D in potions, which is dreadful, which is one of the worst grades you can possibly get. He doesn't want anybody to know he got that grade. But we kind of get an opportunity through that storyline there to understand, okay, where these kids want to be in their subjects as they're approaching the owl test, which I really appreciated. I think she does a really good job in this chapter and throughout this book of just weaving in information like that and making it so organic to the conversations that the kids are having.
It makes it real. Like, their real life concerns are still their schooling. And so having them worry about that along with, you know, other things as well, like, just, it kind of makes it relatable and you believe it, and it's not so far-fetched, or it's not so fantastical that, like, oh, they're at school, but they literally never talk about school, you know?
Yeah, that's a really good point. I think, you know, that is something that makes this, that's what makes it feel real, is it does feel like kids talking about school. It's interesting to watch each of the different teachers react to Umbridge in their classroom. You know, Flitwick, you know, treats her nicely or whatever, but he kind of doesn't really pay all that much attention to her. But man, the fact that she treats Trelawney so badly, and it creates in Harry and Hermione and Harry and Ron kind of a sense of like, oh, we actually feel bad for her, is, you know, you just never thought that would happen, but it's really funny to watch that happen in this class.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't like her anyway, but just the fact that she's so outright rude that he just doesn't want anything to do with that. And he's sort of rooting for her now, which is funny. But it is interesting because we also learn kind of a little bit about Trelawney and her history and her background, and the fact that she used to, she comes from like a very apparently well-known seer, you know, which is not something that we knew before now. And that, you know, it was interesting. And I don't know, have we talked about like Trelawney and her gift? Have we talked about that? I think we did when we first were introduced to.
Yeah, I mean, so we get a little bit of that in the third book, you know, obviously, because we see that there's something about her that goes beyond just being this kind of crackpot divination teacher, you know, because she makes the prediction.
Oh, that's right.
You know,
yeah, that's
and
right.
So I think, you know, that is really interesting. So I think that's the thing with Trelawney, is that we know that she's kind of a fraud for her class, mm-hmm. but that she actually does seem to have this gift to be able to actually prophesy when she's not just trying to make crap up about, you know, and trying to impress the kids. So there's this dichotomy we get with her where we know she's not a complete fraud, but the way she portrays herself in her class, she is.
She kind of makes you feel like you're a fraud.
Yeah.
Just a little bit.
Yeah.
But it is interesting because we kind of have this whole time had this discount of her teaching, right? But at the same time, then it kind of begs the question, then why are the kids learning that, right? Why is it still being taught if it's such a sort of far-fetched and fraudulent topic? Subject. That's the word I'm looking for. Subject. And, you know, interestingly enough, it's not even given when Trelawney is inspected, even though we kind of know she's a fraud, her entire subject is sort of disregarded as sort of a joke, as kind of Hermione did it by Umbridge. And she's like, well, I want you to prophesy something right now. And just knowing the very little we know about this subject, this topic, and this area, it's not reasonable to expect someone just to be able to drop everything and do it, right? It's the same thing as, like, you don't walk into a school, a classroom of music, and just say, play me anything right now. So it's just interesting that that happens, and then she's just so nervous that what's going to happen if she doesn't prophesize, and then she ends up looking like even more of a fraud than originally. So it's just, it's an unfortunate situation, and it definitely feels along the lines of bullying. Umbridge is definitely bullying Trelawney at this point. So it was a very interesting situation that we haven't really been faced with too much yet. So,
well, it'll be interesting to see if that prediction that she made for Trelawney comes true about something dark and some grave peril. So I don't know, you know, maybe she's not completely a fraud. So that'll be definitely interesting to see. I love when they're in Defense Against the Dark Arts, and Hermione is beyond brilliant in this class.
Yeah, and she's like, I've read the whole book already. What?
Well, what? And I love that she, you know, asks that Trelawney's like, so what did he say in this chapter? And Hermione rattles it off, and then she's like, well, I actually disagree with that.
But I don't agree, yeah.
Right. Which is just so fantastic. But then again, what we get here is We get Trelawney giving you the thought process of, you know, and gosh, you've got to know this is wrong, right? The moment anybody in school tells you that you shouldn't be asking questions, there's something wrong. Like, and tells you just to blindly accept whatever you read in a book. It's just like, yeah, you know, yeah, that's probably not right, you know? And so, and I love when she's mentioning previous teachers, she's like, oh, with the exception of Professor Quirrell, who did at least appear to have restricted him to an age-appropriate subjects. And Harry's like, oh, yeah, right. You mean when he had Voldemort sticking out the other side of his head? Mm-hmm.
He gets in so much trouble.
Can you blame him?
You just can't keep his mouth shut. And it's so hard because you want to be like, go, Harry. But at the same time, you're like, I don't know. It's like when you log onto Facebook and you see somebody commenting on a post, and it's like they're inciting you, and they're like trying to get people to argue back and forth. They're like, oh, well, this is wrong and this is wrong. It's like, you are never going to convince anyone this way. Like, never. So just, I get that it makes you feel better, but it's not doing anybody any good. So just.
And it's so hard for poor Harry because, and I can understand his reasoning, you know, because you, like you said, you feel it the moment you see something that's completely blatantly 100% untrue, and you just know it to be so from the very core of your being, you know, that's what he's feeling. He's like, I know this to be completely untrue in every single way, shape, or form, 100% untrue. And you know, you feel an obligation to the truth to speak up. And yet he keeps getting himself into trouble, which, you know, of course, Angela's not happy about at breakfast the next day. And of course, McGonagall is not happy about when she hears about either, and keeps taking points away from Gryffindor for all of the things that Harry is doing. And for the fact that Angela is yelling in the middle of the Great Hall at Harry, like, it's just a very funny scene. But, you know, McGonagall's trying to get it into Harry's head that he's got to stop because this isn't going to help.
I do really love, though, that that Angelina gets points taken away for screaming. And then when McGonagall finds out why, she's like, 5 more points from Gryffindor. And he's like, what? He's like, I warned you. Like, I love McGonagall. It was funny. That one cracked me up. I mean, you're not happy why, but you're like, all right, come on now.
What's wonderful, though, is when we get to McGonagall's class and Harry forgets that he's a little bit miffed at McGonagall and Hermione for her attitude at lunch, because the way McGonagall takes care of Umbridge in her classroom is just beyond brilliant. I love McGonagall so much.
I do too. I love that basically she just lets her have it. And at some point Harry says, I'm not even miffed that like she gets to yell at her and I don't, which there's a part of you that's like, yeah, why is that? But then you're like, no, she's the adult. She's allowed to do that. She's doing it in the best way possible. She's not the one being slandered in the newspaper, so she don't care. but yeah, I do. I think it's so funny. It's just wonderful. If I didn't already love McGonagall, you had to love her here. Especially, I think my favorite moment in this part is when she, when Dolores keeps doing her little, like trying to interrupt with her little like obnoxious noise that the actress does so well in the movie. And McGonagall goes, I generally don't allow people to interrupt me, and like lays into her for that. I'm like, oh my God, it's so funny. It's pretty great.
Yeah, it is awesome. And like you said, the way that she lays into her is totally true. Like, you're here to judge me on my teaching. If you keep interrupting me, how am I going to teach? You know, she just lays into her with logic, which makes it just makes Umbridge look stupid in front of everybody, which is wonderful. And I love, we do get the moment here that does not go with the Fantastic Beasts series, where she says that she's been teaching for 39 years this December, which is not true now. according to the Fantastic Beasts series, which it would be more like 109 years or something. So she's been there for a lot longer.
I thought, was it the 20s? Fantastic Beasts is in the 20s?
It's on the 20s, and this is 1990, I think.
70.
So yeah, it's just it's a lot longer. So
yeah, it's a lot longer. It's like three times as long.
So it just means that McGonagall herself is over 100 at this point. It doesn't bother me, but it is something that's there now.
If you want to know how we feel about that, check out our Fantastic Beasts
which
recording.
You didn't care!
Which is neither of us really gave a crap.
We don't. I love this moment too when you know, Harry, Ron, and Hermione have kind of stayed back so they could listen to what she's saying to McGonagall. And as McGonagall's sweeping out of the room, Harry's like, can't help but give her a little smile. And he's like, he's pretty sure she smiled back at him. And I just, there are these moments with McGonagall and specifically these three and Harry that I think it's just so special, you know, like there's something about her where she truly loves the kids that she teaches. She truly loves what she does. But she has a very special relationship with these three. And I really appreciate that. I think I keep going on about it other than to say, I just think it's special and fun and I really like it.
So I think it's always an interesting topic because there's so much in our society nowadays about not showing favorites, not having favoritism. Everything should be equal all the time. And while I think that everyone should have equal opportunity, I feel like it doesn't always work out that should be how it ends up being. I mean, these three have clearly shown aptitude above and beyond and have endured things that nobody else has endured. And they continue to prove day in and day out that they are unique and they should be treated as such. And I love that she does everything she can to remain fair and stern, but still gives them that little acknowledgement that, like, she knows they go over and above. She knows that they're special and she has a special relationship with them. And it's refreshing to see that done in the appropriate way, because I feel like if it could be done in the appropriate way more, then no one would have, I mean, that cry out would be much easier to ignore. So she just represents to me a very smart, very like grounded teacher.
Yes. And I think you're right. She does a great job of caring about all of her students. But there are those students, like every teacher, there are just some students that you have a different relationship with because of who they are. It's just a personality thing. So I think that's what we see here is one of those. It's those three's personality. And like you said, I think it's also what they've been through. You know, it is completely different from most of the people in this school. And I really, you know, you get to Care of Magical Creatures, where, of course, she's there as well. And she's trying to get out from Professor Grubbly Plank. You know, why Hagrid's not there. And she's like, well, I don't know why he's not there. I don't know. Dumbledore just has me here. And she's like, well, how do you
look? I don't care.
Yeah. And then I just love, too. She's like, well, how do you like working here? And she's like, oh, it's so great. It's like the best thing. And she's basically like, it's the best thing ever. And it's like, that's not what Umbridge wants to hear.
I know. And she does it from such, because she keeps trying to paint her as this like neutral party or this outside observer. And then every time she's like, oh, it's amazing. And she's like, oh, you could just see her being like, ugh. Like every time she asks the question, like, this isn't what I wanted.
It's really great. And it makes you kind of, you know, we don't get a lot from Professor Grubbly Plank, but it's like what you get here. It's like you get a teacher who is, again, she's just committed to her students. She's not here for the politics. Like, she's here to teach, you know, and she's here to help out Dumbledore, who she seems to have a good relationship with, you know. So, and I think that's the thing you really get here. All of these teachers are loyal to Dumbledore. You know, they're loyal to this person who they feel has done well for the school, but has also done right by them, which is something we saw last book with the house elves that work there. They are loyal to Dumbledore because of the way that he treats them. And so we get this sense that Hogwarts is this place of safety and security because there's a man who treats people like other people. Like, they deserve to be treated. And that has kind of flowed top down throughout his entire, you know, run as headmaster. And that's what made has made this school so special. And so it's very it'll be very interesting to kind of watch them then try and deconstruct that, which they have already been trying to do throughout the summer and now through the fall with all of these news articles about, you know, him being crazy.
They're trying to undermine him. And what's interesting is I think we're going to see just how all of this is going to play out, kind of thinking it through and seeing some of what's going on and some of what we kind of learn in the next couple of chapters. I think a lot of pieces are going to kind of come together. And it will be really interesting to see how everything sort of plays out.
I have to say, one of the things that I absolutely love is in this chapter, we have Harry obviously having all these detentions because he keeps getting detention because of all the things that he keeps saying, because he got another one from the fact that he was mouthing off again to Umbridge about what Malfoy said about the hippogriff in the Care of Magical Creatures. And I love that he comes back that night. It's super late. I love that Ron and Hermione are still up. It's like almost midnight. And they've created this solution for him to soak his hands in. Another Fantastic Beast reference with, you know, the Mertlap tentacles. So we've seen a Mertlap now, which is really fun. And so I just love this moment where they are taking care of their friend because they aren't going to tell everybody what's happening to him, but they're there for him. And this is the moment where Hermione and Ron approach Harry about the idea of maybe it would be a good idea for you to teach us defense against the dark arts, because we sure ain't going to learn it in school this year.
I like that she first sort of mentions it. She's very smart about how she kind of gently brings it up and then kind of lays into it. And she knows. She does a very smart thing and a very brave thing, because she knows that Harry is worried people don't believe him. And so she says Voldemort's name, which is a big deal. And I feel like, and I think she even writes that puts him at ease, that puts Harry at ease, that she is willing to trust him enough and use that name and be brave when she's asking something of him, because she knows that, or he knows that that's, because Hermione knows that that's what Harry needs from her right now. And it's just, it's kind of a pretty beautiful little moment where you just love how this is coming together and how this friendship is evolving. And, you know, it's also just proof that Hermione is becoming a much smarter version of herself, if you can imagine that.
Yeah. Well, and I think Ron is too, you know, because Harry tries to be like, but I can't do it. I always had help, but it's not really me, you know, like those kind of things. And Ron, I just love Ron being like, man, I don't know if I want somebody this dumb teaching me, you know, like he's just like, dude, come on, you know, stop. And I love the way that him and Hermione explain it to him. Look, you're right. A lot of those things happen to you, but you're also the only one who actually knows what it's like to face down Voldemort and live. So no matter how you did it, you're still the only one that can help us understand that and then try to have any opportunity to protect ourselves. And I think there's, you know, as much as Harry is right to say, look, I had help, you know, I'm not that great, I love Harry's humility, Ron and Hermione have just as much a point to say, yes, but you did survive, and that means something, and therefore you should be the one to teach us. And I just really appreciate the back and forth between them, because this is a much more grown-up conversation, I think, from all of them. You know, Hermione is kind of tiptoeing around Harry a little bit because she doesn't want her to get her head bit off, but they actually get somewhere in this conversation, and, you know, he does not agree, but they do agree that Harry will think about it, and they'll, you know, he'll get back to them later.
If anything, that alone is just a very adult conclusion to come from, that, you know this is a big ask. You know that, you know, he's not super on board. And so just to come to a balance and a conclusion and say, if you can't say yes, at least say that you will consider it. Like, at least tell me that you will take the time to seriously consider this and to walk away. And that's, you know, that's hard.
And I do feel so bad for Harry, because after all of this, he has another bad night's sleep with dreams of corridors, and he wakes up with his scar prickling again. So it's like, he just really has had a very bad time of it. And, you know, the thought process, I think, for him, too, as much of taking this on, is just that, does he really want to try and handle this? You know, like, Harry's got a lot on his plate. The thought of, like, trying to teach people as well, at this moment, probably doesn't seem the most appealing.
Yeah, he's not super excited to jump back in there. And I also think there's a part of him that's not super excited to jump in the line of fire with Umbridge, right? Like, he is mouthing off, but I think there's a part of him too that's like, all right, I don't necessarily want to, you know, endure this approach every time. You know, there's like a part of him that kind of thinks like, oh, okay, like, maybe McGonagall was right, and maybe I should hold out a little bit and watch myself, and maybe not only am I not sure about myself, but he's also gonna put others in that same line of fire, right? And does he want to potentially subject them to that? So I think there's just a lot of things for him to consider, and he's not terribly confident, so he's just not interested right now.
Well, and again, I think you're completely right. You know, Hermione and Ron know exactly how far to push kind of at this moment, and they've planted the idea in Harry's head, and now we'll have to wait and see what he says as we approach the next chapter in chapter 16 in the Hogshead. But before we get into the Hogshead, Drea, where can people find you if they wanted to catch up with you and talk some more Harry Potter or Fantastic Beasts or anything else that's going on?
Sure. You can find me on Twitter at PCFcheck or on Instagram at Drea Kaufman, and it's COFFMAN.
And you can find me on Instagram, Twitter, and Letterboxd under the same name, MattRushing02. You can also find me here on the network doing Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills, talking about Star Wars each and every week. I also do a couple of shows over on the Track FM network. One is called The Orb with Chris Jones, talking about Star Trek Deep Space Nine. The other I do with Christy Morris, and that's called The 602 Club. That is our general geek show where we talk about all the fandoms we love. And then last but not least, I'm also doing Cinema Stories with my friend Courtney, and that's where we talk about films through the lens of faith. But thank you so much for checking your outpost.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.